Om Parthaya Pratibhutikam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambhatvamani Santatami Bhagavad-gita-bhavad-vaishini. We're on verse 24. Anye sankhena yogena, anye sankhena yogena, karma yogena chapare, karma yogena chapare. Dhyanena atmani pashyanti kechit Atmanam, Atmana, Anye, Sankhyena, Yogena, Karma Yogena, Cha, Apare. In the previous verse, it said, the one who knows in this, the Purusha and the Prakriti in this manner, in the way that has just been unfolded, particularly in this chapter, but in the whole Gita, the one who understands, the one who clearly knows the Purusha and Prakriti, Prakriti together with the Gunas, Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, even in whatever way that person may be existing, or in whatever way that person may be involved or living, that person is not reborn again. They're not born again because the self has never been born and never will be born. And so once you recognize your being as the Atma, there is no birth for you and there never has been any birth for you. And so whatever the anyonya adhyasa, that mutual superimposition that's really function of ignorance, it's a product of ignorance, of self-ignorance. When that self-ignorance is removed, there is no longer an ahankara, an I notion. The ahankara, remember the ahankara means that identification with an upadi. When we call something an upadi, it means that thing lends itself for identification of the, for taking the ahankara. This body is an upadi because I can say I am this body. The mind and the moods, emotions are upadis. Because I can say I am my mind, I am my thoughts, I am happy, I am sad. That's what makes it an upadi. An upadi is whatever can receive the ahankara. The ahankara is the I notion. That I notion is born of ajnana, born of ignorance. When the ignorance is removed, then that subjective anyonya superimposition is also removed. It is not there. It's just like, to really understand the power of this, what we're talking about here, is ignorance, ajnanam itself, is not considered, it's a positive entity in that the ajnanam, ignorance, is a positive entity because it has capacity. Ajnanam has the capacity to cover something and to project something. This twofold capacity that we call avarna, the capacity to cover, and a capacity to project. So, subjectively, for you, what is a subjective ajnanam, an individual ignorance, subjective ignorance, like for instance, the mistaking a rope for a snake, that is subjective. Because they're all, what is there objectively is a rope, right? And so you can't remove the rope, even though the rope is Maya also, It's not subjective, and so you can't get rid of it. Only recognize that it's a rope. But if there is rope ajnanam, ignorance of the rope, you have ignorance of the rope. Your friend doesn't, perhaps. You have ignorance of the rope. You can project on that, because of the ajnanam, a snake. So the snake allows, the ignorance is what allows for the covering of the rope and the projection of the snake. That's very, very powerful. Because what happens then is that you are actually responding, your whole life, your whole emotional life is responding to the snake, right? But the snake is really only a product of ignorance of the rope. Now, the only way you can get rid of ignorance of the rope is through knowledge of the rope. Knowledge of the rope is what removes the snake. It's not knowledge of the snake is not going to remove the snake. Right? It's not even knowledge of the snake, of the ignorance of the snake, that the snake is a product of ignorance. That won't remove the snake. What removes the snake is the knowledge of the rope, and it's the ignorance of the rope that causes, that allows for the projection of the snake. But when you gain knowledge of the rope, the snake goes away. Okay? It goes away. It's not there. You can teach about it, but you can't get it back. That's the product. You know, you can squint your eyes and try to imagine yourself seeing the snake, but you can't get it back, really. You can remember it, and you can teach about it, but you can't get the experience back. It's gone because the ajnanam is gone. That's gone, boom, and not to return again. It's not hiding somewhere. It's removed. Okay, so now, in this situation, for you as a jiva, as an individual, part of Ishwara, this body, mind, sense organs, right? The body, mind, sense organs now are in objective reality. This is all Ishwara. This is not your subjective projection. If it was your subjective projection, then you can get rid of it by self-knowledge, for instance. But when you gain self-knowledge, you know, just like knowledge, it's not like going to be like knowledge of the rope. It's going to be more like knowledge of the sunrise. You have knowledge and understanding of the sun and the earth going around the sun in spite of the sunrise. Right? Because that illusion, you're not responsible for. And so you can see through the illusion. And once you understand, once you see through the illusion, then all of your behavior is geared toward what actually is, not what appears. You know, like Jung had given this story of the Pueblo Indians who said their whole life and their whole purpose was praying to the sun, the Lord of the Sun, to be sure to rise again. You know, that through their prayers and their devotion, through their worship, you know, the sun agreed to continue rising. Because otherwise, when the sun set, how do you know it's going to come back? How do you know that? And so through their prayers and rituals and devotion, you know, they brought the sun back. So that was their life was... centered on that. That was their purpose. But for somebody who recognizes that the sun is stable, actually, then this fear of the sun dipping, you know, going away and maybe never coming back is not there. Right? Because even though what is taking place continues to take place, you see it totally differently. And that takes some knowledge, it takes some clarity, it takes some nishtha, you know, understanding. Otherwise, why would you be so sure the sun's going to come back? You have to understand, right? So here we have a body, mind, sense organs that is here for as long as it is, as long as the prarabdha continues, the prarabdha karma continues, it will be here. And as long as it is here, this body will enjoy consciousness, the mind will enjoy consciousness. All of the upadis, the mind, the body, the sense organs, all of this enjoys consciousness. All of this has a sense of me. I would even go so far as to say, because of the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, the meanness, the conscious being of this body is kind of clay pot-like. You know, it's, there is no experience of conscious being being separate from this body. And so why would not this body, mind, sense organs, we call Karya Karana Sangata, this body, mind, sense organs complex, you know, pervaded by the mind and the sense of touch, etc. Why would it not think that I, this body, mind, sense organs, am the conscious being? Of course it thinks that. It feels that. That's its experience. That's the experience of the mind. The mind never has an experience of it not being conscious. As long as it's awake, conscious being pervades it. Why should it not say, I am the conscious being? Okay? And so the ahankara is absolutely natural. This I notion is absolutely natural to the situation. Why would it not be? However, when knowledge takes place, what happens is that the satya-mitya relationship between the body, mind, sense organs, and myself becomes apparent. I gain knowledge, I gain recognition, I gain understanding, I gain viveka. Viveka means that discrimination, where I recognize that my being, this me, the self that I am, is actually not like, it's not of the same order of reality as everything else that I experience. It's not the same order of reality, because everything else that I experience, from what is external to my sense organs, my physical body, which is perceived by the sense organs, my thoughts, which are objectified, which I'm aware of, that I watch, my emotions that are coming and going, all of my relationships, all of my knowledges, all of my memories, every single experience that I have is an objectifiable experience that is coming and going, that is changing. My being, consciousness, this me, is certainly not objectifiable in the same way. I can't look at conscious being in the same way that I can look at the body, or in the same way that I can look at the mind, or the thoughts, or the sense organs. Being itself is not one of the objects in the world. But that being, which is me, this me-ness, is also, it's not one of the objects in the world, but I can also notice, and this is what happens through teaching as I see it more and more, that this me is not objectifiable, and at the same time, this me that I am is never not there. That is a viveka. That's a discrimination that I need to make and I can make and that is here to be made. Myself, this conscious me, my own presence, is the stable factor. I am the one who is the one in whom all experiences take place. And all the experiences that take place are just that. They take place. They come into being and they go out of being. They come into you, I could say, they come into my purview and they go out of my purview. They come into my experience, they go out of my experience. The me is always the constant there. So now, with all of so much teaching of the Upanishads, there's so many different unfoldments that are going on until I see more and more, I gain that viveka, and I recognize my own presence. I recognize the stability of me in relationship to everything else. Everything else. There is me, who is non-objectifiable, that I can't look at, that I can't objectify, that is self-evident, conscious me, that is the subject of all experience. The subject of all experience itself can't be an object. Because if it's the subject of all experience, then what is going to be the subject of it? And that which cannot be objectified is the ultimate subject that can't be objectified. What gives it its luminosity for it to know itself? Well, the only way that that can be is if that me, the ultimate subject, is conscious being itself. I have to be conscious being. Or there would have to be someone else to know me. And who would that be? I'm the one because of whom the mind is known. The mind is the one because of whom the sense organs are known. The sense organs are the ones because of whom these objects are known. But because of whom am I known? So once I understand the self-evident nature of me, the non-objectifiable nature of me, what you realize in every moment of your experience, the same conscious being, me, is there, unvarnished, untouched. Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever happens to me. That's been differentiated. Once this happens, where I've become differentiated from all of my thoughts enjoy me, but nothing happens to me. Even the ahankara, the I thought comes and goes. Every mood emotion comes and goes. Now, when this becomes clear, as this becomes clear, then what happens to the ahankara? The ahankara, we have to remember, when we say ahankara, we're serious. The ahankara is serious. It's like if I say, the ahankara is this, I say, I am this body, what I mean is, I am this body. Mm. I'm not pretending. The ahankara is not pretending. I am sad. It's not pretending. It's not talking in metaphorically or anything like that. If you say, I am sad, you don't mean my mind is sad. You mean I, who am the body, mind, sense organs, am sad. That's the ahankara. I, who am this body, am aging. That's ahankara. It's not just speaking politely to be able to communicate with the rest of the world, where you say, you know, the body is aging, but you don't want to walk around saying the body is aging and the mind is thinking and the eyes are seeing. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, my eyes are seeing the painting. Oh, look, this body is getting old. Oh, look, this mind, you know, we don't talk like that. But when you're using the ahankara, so when the ajnani will say, you know, I'm going to the store, or look at the painting, I'm seeing that painting. Because they're not going to talk in a weird way. But if ajnani says, you know, I'm aging, they mean this body is aging, not the atma. And so that ahankara, which is a seeming ahankara, is mithya. That's a mithya ahankara. It means this mithya body is aging. It's mithya. But for the jnani, who am I? Right? Is not the body, is not the mind, is not the sense organs. That's gone. That's gone. It's not even gone in the sense of, it's not gone as a belief. It's gone because you know yourself. And your sense of I, the sense of I, the me, or the word I, it resolves into you, into the self that you are. That's your reality now. When you think of you think of yourself, Brahman, this me that is changeless, the one who is always present to whatever the experience is. That's who I am. The ajnanam is gone. When the ajnanam is gone, there is no ahankara there. It does not exist. It exists in a mithya form, as long as the body, mind, sense organs are there, but not in terms of any type of reality. And so when this body drops, the objective creation is gone. The physical body, mind, sense organs is gone, right? This body is gone now. Now what's going to happen to the subtle body? This physical body is gone. What's going to happen to the subtle body? There is no ahankara anymore to hold that subtle body together, right? Because the self of the subtle body is just me. So what's going to keep where's the ajnanam to keep what we call the pravritti? Pravritti means the inclination to go toward this or to go toward that or to be hanging on to some karma. It's not going to happen. The sutra sharira itself, the mind itself, is just going to resolve into me, because that's who's there, is me. And so the effects of the ajnanam, once the ajnanam has been removed, oh, let's put it like this. When the objective reality, like the sunrise, is gone at the time of death, the subjective reality, is already, how do I say it, is already not there. It's just like if I say the rope, because of once I recognize the rope, the snake is gone. That's subjective reality. When I recognize myself, the ahankara is gone. Even now, I can't get that back. You can't even remember what it's like to have that ahankara. It is not there. What is there is the body, mind, sense organs that are enjoying your being. That is there. But that real entity, as though real entity ahankara, is not there because you know yourself. You can't have both. You can't have yourself and an ahankara. It's like having both the rope and the snake. You can't have the rope and the snake. You can have the rope or the snake. You cannot have yourself and the ahankara. You can have yourself and the mithya ahankara, but you can't have yourself and the ahankara, if that makes sense. If that ahankara is gone, the ajnanam is gone, and the ahankara is gone, there's no more transmigration for you. And that's why they say, you know, in this one, once there's that viveka between the purusha, the atma, and the prakriti and all of the gunas. The gunas are responsible for all the moods, emotions of the mind, and also on a cosmic level, on a total level, all activity and all nama and all name and form and all the reflection of consciousness. All of these things are on a cosmic level, but on a total level, on an Ishwara level, but on an individual level, you know, if you look at your mind is influenced by sattva, as a jnani. You can say, oh, my mind's really contemplative today. Or, oh, my mind is so active today. Or my mind, you know, at this moment, it's just so dull and tired. You know what you're talking about. You can say, you can speak in another language. Oh, my mind is so sattvic. Oh, my mind is rajas. Oh, my mind is, you know, so tamas today. It's all qualities of the mind. Qualities of the body, qualities of the world, not qualities of you. All of these qualities, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, the whole maya that's taking place, they all enjoy you. They have you for your for their being. But there is no experience of them changing you or covering you in any way. It's impossible to have that experience. That experience doesn't exist. As though there's some sort of the covering is a covering of ignorance. It's not the covering of a veil. There's a big difference between the covering of a veil and the covering of ignorance. Like the veil, I want to remove the veil of ignorance. As though there's some sort of veil there, so that as long as that veil is there, your being is being covered. Actually, your being is never covered in any way except for your mistaking your being to belong to things that you're objectifying. Being itself is never covered in the slightest. Your being, the me, is not covered by the worst dark emotion. The worst dark emotion is there, being experienced, but it's not covering you. It's not like you need a light emotion in order for you to be revealed, but the dark emotion covers you. The only covering that is there is the covering of misidentification with the emotional state or with the perception. there's no covering at all whatsoever in terms of the of your own nature. The me is present in its pristine form as you are, with or without the presence of the creation. The whole creation, in fact, the whole Ishvara can't cover your being in any way. It's not possible, because in reality there is nothing that is not your being. It's just like the pot. Say if you imagine the most ornate pot, not with painting in it, just clay, the most ornate clay, multi-leveled, you know, multi-leveled carvings into the pot. No matter how many multi-leveled carvings and intricacies go into the clay pot, it is impossible for the clay to be covered. But you can imagine getting lost in the intricacy. All right, but oh, that would be only the mind somehow getting lost in the intricacy. But there is nothing covered. You see, that's so important. There is no, the clay is not covered. And in the same way, there is no possibility of covering your being, because you, in fact, are the only thing that is there. No matter how complex and the intricacy there is in terms of this manifest creation, every nook and cranny of it is only you, and there's no division there. There's no way to for that to be covered at all. And so, in fact, you are not covered. And so now, once you're covered by the, from the standpoint of the mind, simply by the ignorance of the mind totally identifying itself with you, and so you become the common denominator of all experience. Since you're the common denominator of all experience, the common denominator of a happy experience and the common denominator of a very sad experience, you don't count yourself. You only count what you can differentiate. You don't count what is actually there as the constant, the me that is there as the constant. Your mind is just too engaged in looking at the distinctions between the different experiences. And what is infinitely constant on every level is as though invisible and totally taken for granted. And then maybe that's why it's so hard to differentiate me. Like, say, when we're doing these meditations, you can say, well, who am I? Is it this, or is it this, or is it this? Because we're only used to looking at what is differentiating itself. And the only thing that's differentiating itself is the mind. This thought and this thought and this thought and this thought. This thought is different from this thought is different from this is different from this. It gets very, very complex. And the mind is focused only on these points of change, rather than recognizing that the self of every point is changeless. That self, there's nothing that is, there is no point. There is no experience that doesn't have my me as its center. And that is where the viveka has to take place. The viveka isn't going horizontally, or however to say it. It's in terms of depth. I am the self of every experience. Every experience is different. Every vritti is different. But I am the changeless self of every vritti. No vritti, if I have this thought and this thought, that doesn't make any difference. I can have this thought, this thought, this thought, this thought, this thought, this thought, multitasking thought, 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 thought. All of that activity has only one changeless self. The activity, you know, the multitasking that can be going on in your mind is coming from this direction, this direction, this direction, this direction. All of that multitasking has only one presence, one me. The me isn't multitasking, and I am the self of every presence like that. And so once I've recognized myself, that never changes. Once you see, once you recognize yourself, there's no non-recognizing yourself. Why you think there is because once you know, period, in terms of your own being. You can be confused about Ishvara, you can, you know, have problems with your mind and all of this kind of stuff. You know, and problems with letting the body, mind surrender to Ishvara. You can have problems with just being able to relax into the way things are, you know, and to accept, happily accept living in the present. All of this requires, you know, maturity and time. But in the recognition of yourself, once you get it, there's no non-recognition of it again, once you really see. And the reason for that is because you are the self of all thoughts. You are the self, the changeless self of all experiences, and there is no experience that's ever away from you. That's impossible. Whether it's a happy experience or a sad experience or an agitated experience, you're always the one who is there and not covered in any way. Why you don't know this, and you think you know, you think you have knowledge, I'm talking about myself, you think you have knowledge, but there is a dependence on, there is still an adhyasa, in terms of your knowledge, on your state of mind. And so somehow, you often, I know for my own self this is a problem, and I know for so many students and even colleagues and, you know, guru bhais, what happens? my colleagues. My guru bhais, okay? The problem is that because of this word ananda is identified with positive states of mind versus negative states of mind, you feel at home with yourself when your mind is happy or peaceful, you know? And so that's when you really recognize yourself and feel at home and everything makes sense. But when your mind is negative or hurt or whatever, you know, then you don't know, you know, because yourself is as though being covered. All that means is that you haven't done that viveka between your being and every experience that is there. You're still equating equating quality of mental thoughts, qualities of experience, with the one who is the self of all experiences. The viveka has to take place that way, where you recognize your own being, free from and present to the whole gamut of experience. And you recognize wholeness and ananda as belonging to your being, not to particular states of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's moksha. Moksha is not a state of mind. The mind changes as you gain knowledge. The qualities of the mind change. The mind naturally becomes more peaceful. It becomes more relaxed because it's not trying to accomplish, it's not trying to gain fullness from the world. Like, I need the world to be this way so that I can be happy. I need you to be this way so that I can be happy. I need my changes, my life to evolve in some way or another in order for me to be whole and complete. You know? All of that just settles down and settles down and settles down and settles down until your mind doesn't want, even think like it doesn't want that anymore. But it doesn't go from wanting it to not wanting it. Like Shaktipat, you know, with seeing yourself, it goes from seeing it, from not seeing it to seeing it. From all the habitual needs of the mind, it doesn't go from needs to no needs. Because it takes time for the mind to unwind. It takes a good amount of time for the mind to unwind to the point where this body, mind, sense organs is Ishvara. Rather than I'm a jiva, you know, trying to make my way and have Ishvara help me. even that karma yoga buddhi is, as I'm gaining knowledge, you know, I still want things to be a certain way, and so I have a relationship with Ishvara to help neutralize all of that. That neutralization takes time, and that's something that requires maturity and living in the light of your knowledge. That's time consuming, you know, and working through all of the unconscious material and all of that. That all takes time, you know, and maturing. And also, there's so much teaching also to make you really recognize all of this as Ishvara. What that means, that this body, mind, sense organs are part of a part of a conscious, an infinite conscious being. And that infinite conscious being is you, in terms of consciousness itself. So you, in fact, are Ishvara. And when this body, mind, sense organs dies, whether you're Ajnani or Ajnani, but say, Jnani or Ajnani, this body, mind, sense organs dies, and you are still Ishvara. If you are an Ajnani, you'll continue, this body, mind, sense organs, the Ahankara is there, it will continue traveling. Birth after birth after birth, because the Ahankara is still there. When the Ahankara is not there, this body, mind, sense organs goes back into its elements, subtle elements and physical elements. Because there's no Ahankara there, the who is there is Brahman. Right now, for Ajnani, the me is Brahman. That's who I am. The Ahankara doesn't land here. The aham lands on me as I am. And so when that body drops, it's not like ignorance is going to come back. Once ignorance is gone, it's gone. And so I am me, and there's nothing to hold the jiva together again, because it's already dissipated. The jiva is the Ahankara is a product of ignorance. That's not there anymore. And so there is no transmigration anymore for that particular jiva, because who I am is Ishvara. Who you are right now is Ishvara. Because of Ajnanam, you take yourself to be a jiva. You're actually Ishvara. Ishvara means Brahman with Maya, which is intrinsic to, incidental attribute, as Swamiji says, to Brahman. You are Ishvara. You've always been Ishvara. You always will be Ishvara. But from the standpoint of the jiva, there's Ajnanam there. The Ajnanam is what makes the jiva. And so when the Ajnanam is removed, there is no jiva. There is Ishvara. So what happens when the body drops? Well, nothing. You're still Ishvara. The Ishvara that you are, you remain. As Ishvara, you are Ishvara. From the standpoint of the jiva, there's Ajnanam. From the standpoint of Ishvara, there's Brahman plus Maya. For me, there's Brahman plus Maya. For the Jnani, there's Brahman plus Maya. This body, mind, sense organs, as long as it is here, is within Ishvara. It reflects by the sukshma sharira, subtle body, it reflects consciousness. It has an individual sense of I, as you do, you do, you do. But when this drops, then there's no jiva there to hold it to me as Ishvara. And so for me, there's no return, because there is nothing to return. Right? The jiva is gone. The self of the jiva is a product that what causes one to take me, Brahman, Ishvara, as a jiva, that ajnanam is gone. So the jivatvam that had been superimposed on Brahman, on me, you know, is gone. And so for me, there's no more rebirth. And so now, in this next verse, which I'll do in 5 minutes, and then we'll do it more next time.
Which verse are we on?
24.
Okay.
What he's saying here, so this is the vision. Okay, I just gave you this, the important, I didn't do this enough last time, so I wanted to make sure it's clear. Now he says that this vision, this recognition of my being, of myself as Ishvara, he says, some people, kechit pashyanti, dhyanena atmani pashyanti, some people see this they see, Pashyanti, so some see this by means of dhyana, by means of contemplation, in the mind, some in the atma, in the mind here, some see this through meditation, through nididhyasana. So here the dhyana is nididhyasana. Then he says, they see this, they see the atma, some see the atma, the self, atmanam, atmana, by the mind, through meditation. Then he says, others, anyena, anye, sankhyena, yogena, others, they see it through knowledge itself, through the shravana. Sankhya means knowledge, through the yoga of knowledge, through the yoga of this teaching, shravana, manana, nididhyasana, through the shravana itself, through the teaching itself. Some are very clear. Others need dhyanam, they need nididhyasana, because the dehatma buddhi, this identification with the body, mind, sense organs, is so much that even though they have clarity in terms of their knowledge, there continues to be what we call this pratipaksha bhavana, pratibandhika jnanam. Pratibandhika jnanam means there's continual identification with the body, mind, sense organs, and you keep acting like an ajnani. even though you know, you still need to do nididhyasana in order to break this identification with the body, mind, sense organs. There's some rare people, very mature, you know, we don't even say they exist anymore, very mature, who all they need is sankhya. All they need is shravana. And they see it, their mind is already mature, they already have viveka and vairagya, you know, completely, they hear this knowledge and they're finished. But for most people, they hear this knowledge, and then for sannyasis, means people who have their raga dveshas, their likes and dislikes have been neutralized to a very high degree, and they're just abiding as sannyasis. They hear this knowledge, and then they have to contemplate. They have to do dhyanam. In order, because of this, these pratibandhikas, because of these obstructions, they have to do that. But then there's others who also have to do karma yoga. So he says that there's others who need to do karma yoga. Means their mind is still very engaged in their raga dvesha, their likes and dislikes. They need more antakarana shuddhi. They need more purity of mind. They need to become more free of their likes and dislikes and do all inner child work and all of these type of things need to be done. They still need to do a lot of karma yoga. They can all of them can be doing shravana. But it's not for everybody that shravana is enough. Some need dhyanam, nididhyasana. Shravana means shravana manana. Manana is included in the shravana. Other people need to do the dhyanam. Almost everybody needs to. And then some also need to do karma yoga. You know, in order to neutralize likes and dislikes. You know, to be able to live in the present. To be able to say, this is fine. Let me do what needs to be done. To have a mind that is happy, just can be. Can your mind just sit and be engaged in the present? Then if you can, then you just do shravana and nididhyasana. If there's any dehatma buddhi, this identification with the body, you know, just do shravana and nididhyasana and stay here. Be with yourself here. That's the reality anyway. But most people, you know, take some time to be able to do that because we have aspirations and desires and things that we want. Things that we want to work for. Things that will make it better for us tomorrow. Mm. Nothing will make it better for you tomorrow. It's already here right now. What makes it better for you tomorrow can make it better for you today, which is your attitude, your knowledge about how to be today. You have to remember that you are always only in today. There is no tomorrow. You never experience tomorrow. You only always experience today. So every moment is today. And so at some point, your mind is just fine being with Bhagavan today, now, right now. You'll find also as your little children develop in in time, as they, if you do that inner child work, they also mature to being happy to be with you. They're happy to be with you. And you mature to be happy to be with Yeshua. You as an adult, as a person here, you mature to be happy to be with the self, to be with Bhagavan, to be with Ishwara. Your little children will mature. They don't want really, they just want to be with you. That's fine. And with you, so that's enough. That's what they want. I'm with you, that's good. And you become that way toward Ishwara. I'm with you, that's good. This is fine. And your mind just dwells here. And you dwell here. That's really Jnana Nishtha. You dwell here. And you just like to be here. These fantasies become thinner. Fantasies become thinner and thinner, more and more mithya, and less having any type of a grasp on you. And then you can enjoy the reality, which is always just right now. So that's what that verse is about. I'll talk about it more next week. Okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Going to die, right, in his physical body.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Jnani, so if that consciousness fully established, then, and there is no sense of separation from Ishvara and from that me,
right,
then at the time of death approaching, is anything that that actually, beside the body having all kinds of experiences, and the mind, you know, partially participating in those experiences,
yeah,
is there anything that the Jnani would actually choose to focus on in order to transition, or is it just totally arbitrary what happens to this body-mind complex at that moment? You know what I mean?
I think that I think it would be very, I don't really know the answer to that, but I think that it would be just very natural to resolve into your own self. That's what is natural, because you already do that. That's already what the mind does. And that's also the source of ananda, the source of your of the ananda that you used to seek in the world. The mind has discovered as your own being, and so that's where it already is. And so when this body drops, it's not going to go out and try to find that someplace else. That's already the fact of it. You know, as your mind matures, and matures just means it's like once you get this knowledge, that's like you're reborn in a way. Now you're growing up. You're growing up in the light of your knowledge, right? Where your mind And then everything matures now in a new way. Everything matures, your whole mind now matures around your knowledge. And so it becomes more and more mature, and that maturity is really just very, very naturally, effortlessly, over time, abiding more and more just in your own being, because your own being is the source of ananda. You're always trying to do that anyway. When you go and project your ananda, your wholeness, onto an object, then you want to abide in that object, right? You want that object because you projected the ananda, and then your mind wants to be there. And, but that's why you get so hurt, because it doesn't really exist there. It's an illusion, right? And then that illusion walks off or something happens, and then you're kind of stuck. And your mind gets all upset, you know, because it thought that the ananda was there, but the ananda never was there. The ananda is always your own, the source is always, always at all times your own being. And so is your mind. That vairagya, what vairagya means is, as the mind slowly gives up that delusion that the ananda is out here somewhere. The vairagya means that that vairagya resolves itself in the ananda of your being. And so now for one who has matured in their knowledge, that's where your mind stays. And staying there, it experiences the world. That's why, like, say for somebody to so mature, like somebody like Swamiji, you know, his I can't even, wouldn't know how to drag his mind out of the wholeness of his own presence. And that's why when you're, it's so total that when you're in his presence, it's kind of like a contact high in a way.
Well, he developed that capacity, right? I mean, that's been...
Well, it's just a natural maturation. And so you find yourself, like for all of us, our mind goes on and on, maturing into that reality. So it there's nothing, as time goes on, there's less and less and less that can pull it out of that. Because to pull it out of it means that there's some sense that I need that to be happy, you know. Which isn't true. The ananda doesn't exist out there. Ananda is the self. It's not like there's really some sort of, in this one situation or in this one situation, there's some little ananda hidden there. There isn't. It's only your own being. And so what about when that's just where your mind is, and then you experience and you engage in this world. You're engaging in Ishvara, actually. You're always engaging in Ishvara anyway, but your mind isn't contradicting that fact by deciding I want this or I want that, or it has to be like this or it has to be like that. Your mind doesn't do that but why? Not because you've told it you shouldn't do that. It's because it's already enjoying the ananda. It's happy. So as your mind is at home, then it doesn't want to leave home. See what I mean? So as the vairagya naturally matures, your mind is just more and more steady in yourself. Not that it's never not in yourself, but from its own standpoint, you know. It's not asking the world to make you happy. And so then when that's the case, then you can really be present to the world that's here.
So is there a difference if a jnani has 4-stage cancer or not? In terms of the experience?
There's no difference in the experience of your being at all. But there is difference in the pain in your body.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there can be it differs too in your mind, whatever reactions or changes it has to work through to cope with that. But even with that, all of that, there's no difference in you, in your being. That's impossible. There can't be. But there can be things you have to deal with in your mind, and there's definitely things you'll have to deal with in your body. right? That's not going to, that's the same. It's not like a jnani's body has less pain than an ajnani's body. Pain is pain. You may not be building up on it emotionally and going through the emotional trauma to the same degree that an ajnani may be going, but you still have the pain in the body. It's the pain in the body. And I guess there's ways you learn to be with pain, but you have to learn how to be with pain. It's a skill, right? The how to be with the pain, how to be with the body when it's in pain. You can learn how to do those kind of things, but you're still learning how to be with pain. But yourself isn't in pain. Your being is exactly the same.
So why I'm asking that, I mean, that makes conceptually sense, but what I'm asking that is it possible really that even for a jnani at a place in life where on a physical level things totally fall apart,
yeah,
is it possible that that knowledge can actually be compromised to a degree that there is a kind of an evolution backward because the body is just pulling in so much attention and it's such a radical physical experience that jnani actually forgets really who they really are because of the physical nature of the disease, for example?
I think that could happen in this sense. You have to understand, like, if the pain is so all-encompassing, during that time, it's almost like a pain samadhi, in the sense that the pain is so overwhelming that there's nothing in the mind or sense organs that can do anything except be overwhelmed by that pain. But that is a temporary condition. That's not that the jnani has become an ajnani. It means that there is an incredible pain that is taking place that is overwhelming at that time. And maybe that pain will kill you, or you'll take some morphine, or you'll do something that makes that pain subside, that excruciating pain subside. But it's not that because you're overwhelmed by that situation that you've lost yourself or your knowledge in that situation.
It's the devotional tapaha, the endurance, if I may.
Cool.
And Swami TV talked about this when we were doing the Narada Bhakti Sutras, and I do have stage 4, this body does have stage 4 cancer. And the endurance of any discomfort he talked about as a devotional tapaha, I don't know how else to say it, a choice to, the acceptance becomes, I mean, there are those, you know, the cloudiness. I was thinking of the question I asked last week of the shukshma, you know, the mind, the absurdity of the question hit me later.
Why,
you
tell
know,
me.
I asked the question, yeah. We were talking about the Mandukya, that you know, we can see angry thoughts, anxious thoughts, and so forth, and we can see them pass, and the knowledge
yeah.
comes back when they
yeah.
pass, and we see those situations come and go. I'm like, well, that's all shukshma. As though that the body is empirical makes a difference. My mind was saying, the fact that the body is empirical, and there's a disease in the body, and there's physical discomfort, mm-hmm. would seem to say that's a difference than releasing something that is not empirical and gross and material. But the whole teaching in the Mandukya is that both of those side by side
are equally mitya.
And the
yeah.
question itself is the mind clinging to somehow, well, this is different. The empirical reality of the body is different.
Yeah.
And it's more real, you know, because the discomfort vritti is always in the foreground of the experience.
Yeah.
And so the mind somehow insisted on clinging to that material reality is more real, which...
From the standpoint of the self, they're not, one's not more real
yeah.
than the other.
And I
From
went
the standpoint
to bed laughing
of,
aloud
yeah.
that night, you know, because the mind sort of said, oh, silly question. you
yeah.
know, so that there was that moment of just complete befuddlement.
There is one thing, though, that I think that with severe physical pain, the pain can be so much that the mind gets, it's hard for the mind not to be dragged into that pain, you know. Whereas with the mind, because the mind is subtle and it is it's standalone, and not in reference to the body. When the mind has, say, agitation, or hurt, or anger, or the whole spectrum of emotions, that is a little bit different, because I don't feel that emotional states, even when they're happening, have the capacity to cover you. Mm-hmm. To cover, in any way, cloud your own presence. It's not like, say there's some anger happening in the mind, and even if you're going with it, for instance, mm-hmm. even you're going with that anger, your presence is still very much there. I mean, as your mind, I'd say, matures and thins mm-hmm. out, so, you know. Mm-hmm. Your presence isn't compromised by emotions at all. It's not that when the emotion is there, you're not. The emotion is there, you're there. The emotion is gone, you're still there. But I think that with physical pain, the sukshma sharira, including the mind, is encased in this body. And so the body, when it's causing a lot of pain, mm-hmm. the sense organs, you know, the sense of touch, for instance, is there, experiencing that totally. And it's an overwhelming pain, can be an overwhelming pain, which can take all of the attention of the mind. And so that's why what Swamiji was explaining this to me when you were here when I was talking about Swamiji. He said that the pain was so much, so he was really doing some like manana on this experience that he had, that the pain at the when his heart was open and all, it was so much that he said it was hard for him to keep his objectivity, because it's not that you're not there. You're there. And we're just used to, as you mature in your knowledge, you're just used to always being there. If you're there, whatever the thought is, your presence is there. But he said that the pain was so much that he found he was able to manage to keep his objectivity. But that it was so, so much that he felt like he was, you know, being pulled into it. You understand what I'm saying? So that's when you're asking me that, I'm thinking that the pain of the body takes your attention. I remember I was with Swamiji when he was, after this heart surgery and all this, he was in the hospital and we were just all staying in the waiting room there for several days actually. And he would be there, just like that, hour after just, and he said later, once when he was coming out of his he'd kind of rise up out of it. He said, he was saying, that saying that, is helpful. It's a soothing. It's something that there's a release that takes place when you say all that, you know.
I say Ramana Maharshi did that too when he was, had his cancer.
Yeah.
And his disciples were saying, why, if you realize you're not the body?
Yeah.
The body needs it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's soothing. It helps. It, you know?
Yeah.
And he was talking about that. But you know what? This is just going through whatever, you know, the body takes you through and whatever's going on in your mind. It's not a comment at all, these extreme states on whether you have knowledge or you don't have knowledge. It's you're dealing with the situation. It's not like you're becoming an agnani. It's that you're dealing with a situation. You know, and your mind doesn't really care about your knowledge or having knowledge or not having knowledge. Your mind isn't engaged in that. Your mind is being sucked into the pain, and then you can get some relief from it. Pull back and get some relief from it.
Well, what did he mean when he said it was hard to maintain the objectivity? What exactly?
He kept his mind. The pain was so unbelievably excruciating. He used words like that. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Well, there was no anesthetic or anything. It was open. It's unbelievable to even think about it, really.
Did he?
Well, they went in that fast.
Yeah, they went in that fast because it was either that or die. It was really something unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And, there's no time for anything.
So no time?
No.
So he didn't have anesthesia?
No. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
That's right. But so Swamiji, he's so alert, and so he's tried to stay present to the whole thing. Because that's him. He wanted to see, what this is. But he said it was so overwhelming that it was, he said he did it. But it was almost impossible.
So he didn't even go unconscious from that?
No, I don't think he did.
Wow.
From at least what the story he was telling me. I just talked to him about this for a little while. But that's, it just makes me think of who he is. It's like that one time when I was first with him at the ashram in Kauai, was Deepani Sadnalaya. Of course, it just started, and one time he was playing in Bombay. He was playing with this book of matches, and he was trying to show how you can light it with one hand. You know that trick?
Indian rope trick.
Yeah. And the whole book went up in flames, and so he went like that or something like that, and then he didn't like that he responded kind of like that. It didn't bother him. So, because he didn't, because it kind of, I don't know, it just bothered him. He didn't want that. He wanted to have the whole thing go up in flames and he'd be fine with it and object it and take care of it. But he was startled him. So I was wondering, why did I get startled like that, So I could see, with something as traumatic as this, thinking, just how to be with that, to be present to that. But it was so overwhelming that he found it very difficult to do that.
I find it rather amazing that you can gain this vision or clarity about yourself that it's true, and it can go into a mind that still can't hold it. It's almost contradictory.
To understand, you have to... There's a lot of subtle things about understanding all of this. There's little crevices. One is that your being is self-evident. You don't need this universe, and you don't need this mind or this body for you to be. Your being is not dependent on anything, and it's not dependent on any type of luminary. Your being is consciousness itself. So for you, that's Prajnani, that's the fact of it. There's no doubt about that. It's who you are, it's how you abide. But now say, your mind and this body is in a situation. And that situation is extreme. The body is capable of extreme pain. That's why we're so glad that we have morphine and different painkillers. And thank God that these things exist. So that we can be spared of extreme pain. But the body is capable of extreme pain. And the mind will stay conscious to that extreme pain only to a certain degree before it passes out. Right? So it's not body's capable of extreme pain, the mind is capable of extreme pain. That's a fact, It's not a fact anything about your knowledge. It's a fact about what this universe can throw at us. What is capable, what can be experienced in this universe? This universe, the extreme pain can be experienced in this universe. And the mind, say the body's in extreme pain, the mind will stay conscious to it